Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable, and now with 3 months deferred payments too.
Yes, indeed. Ioana Fortune, a resident parenting expert, joins me now to go through some questions you've sent in for our parenting slot. As ever, do text or email your questions to us, afternoonnewstalk.ie, or text 53106. If you don't get to them today, we'll hold them over for next week. Ioana, you were looking at me there when I was saying don't coordinate your mask.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. I think there could be something in that. I think that's going to be the fashion trend. Masks are going to be like the style, the print, the colours, coordination, seasonal colours. I think we should embrace it.
Pinstriped ones for businessmen.
I like it.
I suppose, yeah, kind of paisley ones.
I saw a really good paisley one. Anyone who's in the psychology or psychotherapy field will probably think this is really good. Everyone else will be like, no, that's ridiculous. But the print from Freud's analytic couch, which is in London in the Freud Museum, they've made masks out of that print. So do you see hear the excitement in my voice when I say that? So yeah, paisley masks are out there. They are there.
It's just a matter of time before I have one then, isn't it? Right then, on to our first question for Ioana. It is this, it's a couple wondering about telling their siblings about their autistic brother. My son is 8 and is the eldest of 3. He's brilliant and loving and so good to his younger siblings. However, he is autistic and I need to find a way to explain this to his younger siblings, a 3-year-old sister and a 5-year-old brother. I've not bothered up to now, but they've started asking questions, mainly the 5-year-old, about him when he has tough moments. They ask, why does he get so upset? Why won't he play with us? Where does he go when he's on his own? Sometimes he goes to speech and language therapy, which he's really missed during the lockdown. Is there a particular way I should handle this? I want to normalise it, as his life is as normal as we can make it.
Oh, I think this is such a great question, and anybody who has a child with ASD and has other children, non-autistic siblings, are going to have grappled with this. So if anyone has, it would be great to message in what you found worked and didn't work. I've done a significant amount of therapeutic work with the non-autistic siblings of autistic children, because the siblings of autistic children, or any children who have additional needs, to be honest, I always find that they play a really important role in the family and in the life of their sibling. But actually, and again, this isn't a judgment, because I get it. I get the demands and how hard, but the non-autistic siblings, they tend to get less time with their parents, less focus, less attention, simply because the needs of the other child can be so consuming. So we can find that those children struggle with their own emotional development. They try to suppress things because they don't want to be a bother. They don't want to cause any more difficulties at home. And it can, not always, but it can lead to some emerging anxiety. So I think this is great that they're 3 and 5 years old and you're thinking, how do I also make this easy for them to understand and make them a part of it? Because I really think you have to make this an open and comfortable topic to talk about in your family. Not that it's hush hush, don't mention the autism, but actually autism is in our family. That's something we speak about. Because as your children are going to grow and develop, the type of conversation you have about this is going to have to grow and develop with them, because their questions, their understanding will evolve as they do. So this isn't a one-off chat. It's an ongoing chat. I think, you know, and I think your 5-year-old is spot on, isn't he, really? He's asking those really pertinent questions about why is he upset? Why won't he play? And where is he going in speech and language? Because a really nice way to open the conversation is to say, you know, your brother, his brain is just wired a little bit differently to yours and your other siblings. And that means he finds and experiences or feels the world in a different way. That's all it means. And when you have autism, and name it, that's the name of what he has, it causes problems, or it can, because, you know, children can present with different manifestations and symptoms, but it can cause problems with talking. That's where he goes, by the way, when he's not here. He's going for someone who's going to help him with that. And it can cause problems with playing. But one of the things you and your sister, you and your sibling can do, is you could help him to learn more about playing by playing with him.
Okay.
So you're saying, yes, this is a struggle, but here's what we're doing about it every time. And it can also cause problems with understanding your own feelings and other people's feelings. So if your brother is having a tough moment, I like that expression, I think that's nice, because that could be he's very upset, or it could in some homes, or maybe in yours, be it's an aggressive outburst. But when he's having a tough moment, it's my job to help him, not yours. So you call for me if I'm not there, or call for the grown up in charge, and you can step back. It's not for you to take that on and fix it. I can do that. So you're coming at it in a really open, positive, solution focused way. I think some of the questions that I've had from young kids about autism is things that they might not feel comfortable asking at home. And they've said to me, do you think I could catch autism from my brother?
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah. You want to say, you know, you can't catch autism. That's just not the way it works. You're born with it. It's how your brain is working. Your the brain of someone with autism just works a bit differently, just feels and experiences the world in a different way. And, you know, sometimes people with autism are going to need extra help. And we try to do that. But it doesn't mean that you don't get what you need as well. So I would say to you to try and ensure that you've got some one-to-one time with your children. You know, look, in general, that's a good rule of thumb, but certainly just to give them a little bit of a break as well. And don't judge any of their questions or comments. Like if they get frustrated and they say something that maybe isn't the kindest thing to say, maybe place that in. I know you're upset and you said that because you're upset. And it's okay to say it to me, but I'm asking that you don't say that to your brother.
Sure. And you don't get supports, do you not, in the situation?
Do you know, they're not as readily available as you'd hope. I mean, it's definitely worth reaching out and linking in with organisations like As I Am or Autism Ireland and seeing what's available. It's really not that readily available, those support groups. So there are some books out there. Todd Parr writes lovely books in general and has two. One is called It's Okay to Be Different. And it talks about differences in lots of ways. And one is Special People's Special Ways, which is a really nice book. For 4 to 9 year olds, then Carolyn Brock has a book called My Family is Different that really tackles this. And for 8 to 13 year olds, that more older age group, there is a lovely book called Everybody is Different, a book for young people who have brothers or sisters with autism. It's very specific, but it's also something that might be worth doing.
Great stuff. And as Joanna says, if you have some experiences you could share with us there, that would be great. 5316 for your text on that. This concerns a 4-year-old moving schools. A little boy will be 4 in October. He's starting his second year of preschool later this month. Due to a change in our childcare situation, we've had to move him to a new preschool. We have not yet told him he'll be moving schools. His old preschool, though, is having a graduation ceremony this Friday, and we're unsure whether to bring him. He loved his old preschool, and we're worried that bringing him to the ceremony and seeing his friends and the teachers will remind him of this. We don't want to deny him the opportunity of attending the ceremony, as we know he would really enjoy it. His best friend also attends the same preschool and will be attending on Friday. Should we just make a clean break and not mention the ceremony, or give him closure and bring him to the ceremony, trying to do what's best for him? A hard decision for them there.
It is, but you know, I'm going to say bring him. I'm going to say bring him, because closure and goodbyes are really important for children, because they're still, you know, he at this age will have developed that people permanence, you know, that people still exist even when I don't see them and I can hold them in mind. But endings are so important. And our children didn't get that, you know, with the school year they've just left behind, because it was all so abrupt. You're finishing school right now this minute, and we don't know when you'll be coming back. And as it has turned out, they didn't go back. So where we can give them closure and endings, I think it's really beneficial to do it. The fact that you're moving him to a new preschool, don't see that as a negative. You know, you want to really celebrate that and present it to him as, you know, you've done this school and now it's time for the new school, and you make it super positive. You're really happy about it. Do drive-bys, point it out. That's it over there. It's going to be so much fun. And, you know, that you give him, let him pick something new for school,
sure.
You know, whatever, a beaker, a snack box, whatever it is, something like that.
Right, and sell it to him, basically, right. This one concerns a 7-year-old displaying tics. Our little lad just turned 7 2 weeks ago. On and off, he's had these little tics, but lately he's got a lot worse. He twitches his head, or he makes a noise with his mouth, which can be once every minute, or like last night, every 3 seconds, and is very loud. He also won't sleep at all. He could be still awake at 3 a.m. He doesn't call us. He just keeps himself occupied reading, etc. He gets really annoyed at himself and is away with the fairies the next day. He has got play therapy before Christmas. He is behind the social issues, but academically he's ahead. Just worried that he's okay in himself, as he can be very emotional. Or should we look into it a bit further? He also has a 22-month old sister. I was very struck by a 7-year-old reading at 3 a.m. there.
I know. No wonder he can be away with the fairies the next day. He must be exhausted and yet somehow keeping going. It's not putting him to sleep. So, I mean, look, the short answer here is yes. I'm going to strongly advise that you do go to your GP and seek a referral to CAMHS, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, just to have this looked at, because you're talking about tics that have been on and off. Tics are really common. actually in childhood. And they tend to start, you know, by about 5 years old. And then they tend to disappear again by kind of 6-7 years old, you know, generally speaking. That's if they're just developmental and not something, you know, to do with any kind of a neurological disorder or developmental issue. Because they're typically not serious and will improve over time. But if you've had tics that are consistent and have been present for in and around a year, be that on and off or not, they've been present, I would really like those explored. But with this little guy, it's not just tics. We're also talking about how he's awake at night. We're talking about him getting really annoyed with himself and being distracted. That's what I'm reading into the Away with the Fairies piece. You know, I just think there's enough there for me, sure, to say maybe make sure there isn't any sensory issues that he could do with getting some little help with, and that the best way to do that is get a referral. Their waiting lists are long, so go now and get that referral. The other thing is he's had play therapy before Christmas. So I'm wondering if the play therapy is ongoing or did it end? And if either way, in fact, why don't you link in with the play therapist and get some advice, support, or what work did they do? Did anything come up in those sessions that would give you some clarity about that? So maybe get some feedback from your play therapist as well. And in the meantime, do lots of match and regulate play. So that would be that you're setting the tempo and the tone and he's copying you. You can clap out a basic rhythm, have him copy and mirror, add in some things. He might do, you know, clap your legs, 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 clap your hands, and then add in a click or add in a wave or whatever it is, but change it up gradually, but keep him with you. Play mirrors where he's being your mirror. Do sound games like jelly ice cream. So you say jelly, he says ice cream back, but he must say it the way that you do, so that you're bringing him up and down and settling somewhere in the middle. Those kinds of games are really, really good in the meantime. But in and of themselves at this stage, I don't think they're enough. Okay. So I think do them, but please do go to your GP as well and seek a referral.
Sure. Okay. We have a quick break to get out of the way, but if you have questions for us, let us know. 53106 is the text number. We'll have more after this.
Great.
Excuse me. You're very welcome back. Tom Dunn with you, standing in for Sean today. And Joanna Fortune, parenting expert, is with us answering your questions. We were talking about the little 8-year-old boy with autism, and some of the listeners are saying, my son has autism. And I found once we spoke openly about it around the house from the get-go, all the kids talk about it freely and ask questions without being afraid to ask. And little listener says, I would bring my daughter along to her sister's appointments so she knew where the sister was going and she didn't see it in a negative way. That's a good idea.
I think
too.
That's a good idea. And I think for the 5-year-old, the 3-year-old might want to get stuck in, but I think that actually is a really good idea. I think as well, you know, you could add into that, because it's as their friends begin to ask them questions, why does your brother do this or that, that can also become difficult, that you flag in that open, honest conversation, you know, if your friends ever ask you questions, I can help you answer this, so let me know. Yeah.
Really good. 5-3-1-6 for your texts. Keep them coming, please. And this one asked from a 4-year-old with a sweet tooth. Wouldn't have thought that puts you, the 4-year-old, in a particularly unusual situation.
No.
My 4-year-old has an insatiable appetite for goodies. She is obsessed with cookies, jellies, ice cream, crisps and chocolate. She asks for goodies at least 5 times per hour, gets very upset when we refuse. Whenever we visit people, this is the first thing she will ask about. It is very embarrassing. Is there anything I can do? She's insatiable. She's one older brother and younger brother, and none of them have the same sweet tooth.
She's just wired for it, isn't she? She's discovered this is
lovely,
and I want loads
of it.
She's
14 now, and you just—I don't know. We certainly roll with the flow.
Yeah,
learn to say the word no, and
just
carry on.
This is it, and acknowledge the disappointment. Oh, you keep asking me because you wish the answer was different, but it's still no. And you just say it exactly like that. Oh, there you go, asking me again. But I bet you know what I'm going to say. And then you get them to say the no for you. Ultimately, when it comes to the treats thing, because I mean, you know, if there was loads of treats in my house, I'd probably decide I'm going to forego the healthy meals and just eat the treats too, is to make healthier treats yourself and involve your little one in that, like give her, you know, a little apron and the spoon that she can stir things up. And look, there's tons of options out there with healthy toddler treats, you know, with all the kind of baby feeding and family feeding. You know, Aileen Cox Blundell has some gorgeous recipes that she shares about making really healthier option treats. And I know Susan Jane White does the same, you know, just oats and grated fruit. And it tastes really sweet when you bake them. So you are getting that sweetness, but it's not coming from, you know, artificial sugars or sweeteners. So you can do that, and simply around the house have snack bowls available. grazing bulls that the kids can, don't even have to ask you, so that you're communicating in a doing, not saying way. Do you know, don't bring that request to me, because what's available to you for snacks is always in those bowls. Have things like dried fruit, because that's very sweet. Have some nuts, whole grain, you know, those like tortilla crisps, but you can get the whole grain ones. Have a couple of those out. So they're at, or the crackers, whatever it is, or cheese. Have those lying around, or and some homemade healthier cookies that you might do yourself. But though that's the snack bowl. So there's no point asking me, because if it's not in the bowl, the answer is no. And if you just keep put that in, now it's not like she's going to just adjust and say, no. Oh, great, that's fantastic. It takes time to kind of make that a new default. When it comes to the friends' houses, I mean, they're just chancing their arms saying, this person is likely to say yes.
Exactly.
They're not even thinking you're embarrassed by it. But you, if it's a good friend, you might want to call ahead and say, look, they're definitely going to ask you. And it would really help me if you would say, oh, no, but there are some nuts or dried fruit that your mom brought with you, or your dad brought with him, and they're in over there and you can have those. So you're all the time saying what you can have as opposed to what you can't have. Ultimately, with all of this, I just think avoid placing an emotional charge around food. Avoid making food a battleground. And we do this kind of hierarchy with food anyway. We incentivize kids' behavior with treats. If you do this, you can have some chocolate. If you, oh, you're sad and you cut your knee, have a biscuit, yes. You'll feel better. We do this, and you never incentivize them with broccoli. Like, you don't say, look at you, you can have some cauliflower right now. So we are also teaching them, this is the good stuff, and this is the stuff we should all be wanting. So some kids just go, you're absolutely right, I really, really want it. And I'd say you've got one of those. So try to do small but significant changes and keep them consistent.
I think we have one of them as well. And we're a long time down the road now at this point. There's some wonderful phrases. She says things like, we must get sweets for the car. That's as if the car is going to eat them.
For this lovely journey, though, she's not wrong.
Yeah, and we were talking to Mairead there about the sheep who'd be testing the electric fence, see if there's a break in it. They're testing you to see if there's a break in you at any point. You might let them have sweets.
Yeah.
It never stops.
Because if it's in the car, it's not in the house, so the same rules don't apply. I mean, it's genius thinking, really.
Watch a TV show about cooking and say, let's cook the things they're cooking, the cakes they're cooking. Let's do one every day. How about every day after dinner, I cook.
So, it's endless. Yeah, they are creative with it. Yeah.
Another tweet text on the child with autism. Listener says, I have a 7-year-old boy with autism, and his 5-year-old brother knows that he has autism, although he doesn't totally understand this. He's very quick to point out to other children that his brother has autism, and please be kind to him.
That's
isn't that lovely? Yeah. Simple thing to teach your kids. Now then, we have a 5-year-old who doesn't get sweets and eats the blanket instead. My 5-year-old blanket, my 5-year-old daughter, because there is a daughter called Blanket, isn't there?
Michael Jackson's child, yeah.
My 5-year-old daughter loves her blanket. It goes everywhere with her and comforts her. That's fine. My issue is she really chews it. It's not as if she's swallowing it or something. I always take it off her when she does this, which of course starts fights, but my rule is no chewing. She's chewing her duvet now, and I feel it's because I take away the blanket at night over the chewing. How do I stop it? I'm worried about how it might affect her teeth.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, germs or whatever might be sitting on the blanket as well. I do get this. And I think if you are worried about her teeth or if there is any effect, always go to a pediatric dentist who can check that out and give you some reassurance. Also, I think sometimes this message coming from someone like a dentist, they hear, your kids hear it differently than when you say it. They just add it to a list of things you're telling them to do or not to do, so they don't take it as seriously. Whereas if, you know, somebody in a position of authority like the dentist says it, it can. I'm really interested in chewing, you know, and what purpose this is serving for her. Because I think if you can work that out, you'll work out how you can address it. And when you think about chewing as a motion, it's really providing that kind of proprioceptive, that deep pressure input, that sense that from, you know, the skin or from chewing, the action that then tells the brain you're safe. It's regulating. It's an attempt to self-regulate. It's that input to the jaw that chewing gives. And I think it's very calming and also very emotionally organizing. So I'm wondering if it's times of the day when she's tired or when she's, you know, maybe a little agitated or distressed. Is it a comfort time that she's seeking it? I would ensure that you've got lots of different textured foods in her diet, actually, things that are crunchy and chewy that are built into her diet or as her snacks. And if you see her doing something, that you have something that you can give her, a cracker or something more chewy, that you, a piece of dried fruit actually, in fact, would be perfect. It's chewy, that she could chew on that way to provide that same proprioceptive input to the jaw that the chewing the blanket is doing. it's really about a way of staying calm. So if you can find other ways of doing that with her, so I would increase the nurture play with her. Lots of sensory, lots of touch. Food is very regulating as well. But of course, I'm not suggesting that you give her loads of like food for no reason, but that you really sit with her and you say, you know, rub the back of her hand, do some lotion rub in, do a little cotton ball touch game. She can close her eyes, and wherever you touch her nose, her chin, her forehead, she names where you're touching, but she keeps her eyes closed while you give her that touch. I think that could be really nice. And at nighttime, if that's when she's also seeking this out, do a really relaxing bedtime routine and a top to toe goodnight, where you say goodnight to her hair, kiss her hair, goodnight forehead, kiss her forehead, goodnight nose. And you do all the way down to her toes, so that she's really getting a lot of nurture and comfort. You're topping up that little love cup right before bed, which might help her with this. But I imagine it's a comfort situation. Yeah. So pay attention, or if you don't know, track the times of the day she's more likely. Because if you can anticipate when she's going to do it, you can get ahead of this and put some other nurture activity in its place.
Yeah, sounds like a lovely way of dealing with it. This one now from a listener who's struggling to put down, a 21-month-old. We have a 21-month-old daughter that gets really upset when my partner tries to put her down. She spends a lot of time with me as I work at a creche, which she attends, and my partner is away a lot for work. Usually I can get her down to sleep quite easily when he's away, but anytime I ask him to put her down, she cries for me, and it takes her a lot longer to settle than it would me. Well, I don't mind putting her down most of the time. It'd be nice if my partner was able to do it every now and again without the crying. We have tried both putting her down with him lying in the bed, but she just gets out of it and climbs into my arms. If I try to hide into the room, she comes to the door and cries for me, so usually I end up lying down with her. Just wondering, is there anything we can do to help it? Should I let her scream? Not a fan of that. Or do I just put her down every single night? Any advice? Greatly appreciate it.
Oh, but you know, no, don't let her scream. That's the absolute no. I absolutely, and the parent is saying, they're not a fan of it themselves.
Crying out.
No, I don't. Like, especially at this age. I mean, you know, while they're so young, particularly under three, they're very much still developing systems. And actually, you know, attachment research would point to, the more we respond to their emotional needs in those early years, the less needy they grow up to become. So it's really important that she knows, you know, you're going to make me feel better and help me feel better, so that I can ultimately grow up to help myself feel better by learning from that. So no, and also, because you're not a fan of it yourself, as this parent is saying, you know, it definitely won't work, because your heart wouldn't be in it. You'd crack really quickly.
Gina Ford was the main...
She was the one. You know, look at, people will be listening
rang
and say, I did that
once,
and it was great, you know.
Yeah, we were onto her website so much, she actually rang our house.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. And we did have to cry out little Eva when she was around 6 months. She had colic.
Oh gosh, that's really hard.
Yeah, it did work.
I think it's really hard on parents though as well, because in my experience of it, everyone ends up crying, parents and everything. You're trying not to go in, but you're crying about it as well. So no, I think actually though, I don't think this is that level either.
No,
by the way,
it sounds like she just prefers her.
I'm not going to say that, Tom.
what you're used to.
No, I think it's that. I think it's what she's used to.
Why change what's working,
I think it's because she's around her mom most of the day. You work in the creche that she's in. She sees you putting other kids to sleep. She sees the people who work in her room in the creche are the ones who put her to sleep. She knows you work there. She sees you wearing the same outfit, I imagine, the T-shirt and, you know, the fleece thing that everybody wears in creches. And her dad is away a lot for work. You know, so I think she's just simply internalized, this is how it is.
Yeah.
When it's time to go to bed, that's what you do. So when you then, and I totally get it, you know, you're trying to get a night off and go, it sure would be really nice if he could do it and you could be downstairs. But that's not the reality, because she just thinks you're messing with her. Like, she's just going, what are you doing?
What's going on?
Like, why are you sending him up here to do this? This is what you do. And children love predictability. They love
and
that
routine.
Calm, consistent, that I can anticipate with certainty what's going to happen and be right about it. So I think that's the struggle you've got here. So I don't have a nice, neat answer. If you really want to change this, you have to tolerate that when she's crying without you, she's not crying alone. She's crying with her dad. Okay, so if she ultimately settles, that's not the same as cry it out. You know, she's crying with a loving, available parent with her. And if she will ultimately settle and you can tolerate that and it doesn't go on too long, you could do that, and through repeated experience, she'll get used to him occasionally doing it. If not, and you know the quickest, easiest, calmest way to get this done is me, and you are happy enough to do it, I would say do it.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't love people being really distressed going to sleep at night or carrying
that
distress in. If it works and you can do it,
go for it.
There will always be the time you have to be out and he'll have to do it. So I do think keep trying him once in a while. But pick your battles, I find, sometimes with the parenting
stuff.
I
live by that. yes, Joanna, thank you very much for that. As always, you can listen back to the Parenting Podcast on News Talk app. But a paediatric dentist is saying, listening, please, please don't give them grazing bowls. Teeth need a food-free time. Dried fruit is the worst. If I see another preschooler suffering with decay and needing crowns and extractions, I will cry.
No, I don't disagree with that. I just think it's a lot better than chocolate.
Yeah.
You know, if you're weaning off down from chocolate weaning down, I think it's a happier alternative. It's not the best.
All right. Joanne, thank you very much for that. After the break, why we swim.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.